ladies and gentlemen, boiled and cooled. Comic beards and extravaganza like no other. Feast your eyes and ears on things that defy, confound, mystify, and even melt your brain. Admission is free, liability is waived. So buckle up, kiddies. It's time for
The Weird Show.
Welcome back, everybody. This is That Weird Show, the Freak Show Podcasting, and I, of course, the Baron of the Bazaar, your host, The Shadow. I just want to say real quick, thank you, everybody, that has been joining the Facebook page, as well as the group, and following and subscribing to the other platforms, such as YouTube and Rumble. And, you know, downloading the audio from places like RSS, Spotify, iHeartRadio, and so many other places. I appreciate each and every one of you for, you know, taking the time to check out the show. And if you like the content of all this, share this out and, you know, help me grow this. Also, if you got some idea that you would like to have me discuss on the show or even come on the show to talk about them, reach out to me on Facebook and I'd be more than happy to talk to you and let's get you on here. If you got a weird story, I want to hear it. Also, before I go any further, I do want to make a couple of quick shout-outs. And the first one being is, you know, Street Noise Design, which is a graphic design venture that I've started to do everything graphic-related, whether it's for a Facebook ad, a social media ad, YouTube, video content, things like that. Get a hold of me. I would love to help you out. And also, this show is streaming on Parapost Network Central. If you don't know what that is a page you can find on Facebook that is all podcast. And I'm talking everything from paranormal to conspiracies and cryptids, current event, TV shows, music, everything else. If you're interested in finding some, well, you know, what's available on Parapost, take a swim by, check it out. And if you have a show of your own, reach out to them. They'd be more than happy to get your program on this page as well. All right. Enough with the jibber jabber and on with the show. And, you know, when I did my show a couple of days ago on the mystery of Atlantis, I had briefly talked about how the origin of that legend doesn't start in Greece or Rome, but actually starts in Egypt. And so for a long time, we've always looked at Atlantis as some part of a Greek mythology. You know, when we try to envision what it looks like, we see it with Romanesque type columns and everything else. And none of that's true. We don't even know if there was any kind of, you know, Mediterranean influence in the culture that would be Atlantis. Now, whether or not Atlantis was real, it's always been up for debate. But Atlantis talked about, or at least brings up an idea that civilization is not what we thought it was. Civilization is potentially much, much older. And I will be talking about, you know, quite a few speakers, and I'll be showing some pictures and stuff like that throughout the show. If you have, you know, something that you'd like to share, you know, post it up in the comment. And let's try to get this story out there and, you know, learn more. This is such a fascinating topic that, you know, so we've all heard of Egypt. We all know about the Great Pyramid. We all know about the mysterious Sphinx. And, you know, we look at the things in the places, the artifact. We look at the ancient writings and the hieroglyphs, and we see a thriving culture. And for those of you that aren't really familiar with everything, you know, historical, not to worry. With this show, I wanted to make sure I did some research because, again, I find this such a fascinating topic. And I've been fascinated by this ever since I was a kid. Now, according to mainstream academic, the place that we call the Sahara Desert, or Northern Africa, this began to emerge about 7 million years ago. And this is the result of the tectonic shift. You may have heard of Pangaea or the supercontinent as it began to break up. And, you know, over millions of years, the tectonic plates begin, you know, they continue to slide and shift to what we now see as the seven continents. And what's interesting is it has only been up to within the last 4,500 to 8,000 years that the Sahara Desert had been around. And what that means is prior to 4,500 to 8,000 years ago, Northern Africa was very much a very lush, lively environment. I mean, we're talking trees, we're talking rivers and lake. There was so much more going on back then that it's just hard to imagine what it must have looked like before. Now, there are plenty of satellite images that show extinct riverbeds and lake scattered all throughout the parts of the Sahara that's not covered by blown sand. And so there's plenty of evidence to show that there was something thriving there before the desert. And of course, within that desert is a country called Egypt. And within Egypt is a city that is a testament to the ingenuity of mankind or humankind. Let me rephrase that. The pyramid, the sphinx, the tomb, the written language, and there's so many artifacts that just defy our understanding of how advanced or how creative we were in those days. And now Egypt goes back to, as far as what we've been taught, Egypt goes back 2500 BC to the reign of Khafre. Now, this is the accepted norm. This is, you know, what Egyptologists teach us. This is what the Museum of Natural History teaches us. This is what school teaches us. And yet all throughout, you know, Egyptian tech, whether you look at the scrolls or the writing on the wall, they mention a time before them. They call it the time before. And they call that Zep-Tepi. That's how they pronounce it, the time before, Zep-Tepi. And this is back when they say that the gods walked among men, that the gods helped build these structures. And of course, the most controversial structure in all of this, and I'm not saying that there aren't other ones, and we will talk more about some of them, but one of the most controversial structures in Egypt and the Giza Plateau is the Sphinx. And there are several reasons why this is so controversial, because if you have any experience in, you know, doing any kind of research or watching TV shows or anything about ancient Egypt, the one thing you'll notice is that every time they do a carving of a person or an animal or anything that is has to be mathematically aligned or properly proportioned, whatever, it's always done consistently. And yet, the head on the Sphinx is so disproportionate to the rest of the body. You look at any other hieroglyph that shows a lion, the heads are proportionate to the body. You look at the hieroglyphs and carvings of the ancient god, whether it be Thoth, whether it be Ra, whether it be Seti, Osiris, Isis, every single one of them, even though they may be larger than the average person, in as far as the scales go, even they are properly proportioned. So why is it that a civilization as advanced as Egypt was, where if you want to stick to the whole 4,000 years old civilization, how is it that this community, this people, this society, as advanced as they were, would make something so obviously out of proportion. This makes no sense. So now we have a emerging theory, or at least one that's been around for a while, but it's not talked about very often. And I kind of find that a little alarming, mostly because this is one that warrants further discussion and study. But the theory that the head that's on the Sphinx right now was not the original head. That it was, at one point, a lion's head. That it would eventually be carved down to have the head of Khafre, who they believe is the face on the head of the Sphinx. And yet, the other issue is, why only that Sphinx with the pharaoh head? If this was supposed to be a common icon in the Egyptian hieroglyphs and in their written language, or even in their art, if this was supposed to be a common icon, why is it that this is the only one that we see at this scale with the human head? If you look at some of the other examples of ancient sphinxes that may have certain human qualities about them, again, they are proportionate. But the Great Sphinx of the Giza Plateau is not. The other reason why it's such a controversial subject to talk about is the fact that the weathering pattern on the body and the head simply do not match. There is nothing similar about what you see on the head and the body, or even the wall of the ground from which the body was originally carved out of. And what's strange about that is everything on the head from about the neck up shows evidence of clear wind erosion. This is something that we see. You see this on the Grand Canyon. You see this on the mountains. You see this, you know, anywhere where you see a lot of rock that's been exposed to wind. You can see the kind of wind erosion that's associated with that. We're talking horizontal striation everywhere. And that's evident on the head of the Sphinx. But then you get down below the neck, you get down to the main body of the Sphinx, and you don't see wind erosion. You see water erosion. Of course, this now brings everything into question because, again, when we look at mainstream academic, and they tell us how old Egyptian civilization is, we're told that it only goes back just short of 5,000 years ago. And of course, if you look at ancient Sumer, you know, I believe they go back about 5,000 or 6,000 years ago. You know, they're older than the Egyptian. But when you start to look at the Sphinx and the water erosion, you ask, well, if the Sahara has been a desert for at least 4,000 to 8,000 years, when did it have water? When did it have enough water to cause the kind of deep groove that we see on both the body and the wall? And that only goes back, if you, when you look at the computer simulations and you look at some of the core samples and you actually do a reverse progression, you see that the desert is only, again, as I mentioned, it's only been about 8,000 years. So that means the Sphinx had to have been created prior to 8,000 years ago at the longest. And the reason for that is when you think about water erosion and you think about all the amount of rain that it takes to create that kind of erosion, we're not talking just a couple hundred years. We're talking thousands of years, most likely. And now we have these ideas, you know, people that are coming out with this quote unquote radical theory or fringe science that put the Sphinx back possibly as far back as 12,000 years. And if that goes back 12,000 years, what else goes back that far? Well, we have another plate that's just as old, if not the oldest. You know, we're not going to find out anytime soon because of, you know, money and power and cover-ups and government issue. But Göbekli Tepe. Göbekli Tepe goes back to 10,000 BC, which is 12,000 years from now. And what's also interesting about that is that both of these emerge shortly after the last ice age. And if you ever get the chance, if you ever heard, you know, listen to Joe Rogan's podcast when he had Graham Hancock on, and later on in the next couple of days, I will post the link for that particular video along with a couple others on the Facebook page. So this way you don't have to try to search it out too hard. But he had Graham Hancock on his show, and Graham Hancock said it best, that we are a species with amnesia. He has the idea that advanced civilization or high culture go back much farther, and that the only reason why we see either so little or no evidence of it is because of the cataclysmic event. And of course, you can talk about the Younger Dryas event, you can talk about the Ice Age, you can talk about the possibility that, you know, there was some other type of natural disaster that took place and wiped out civilization. I've asked this question before. How many times has humanity been here? How many times has humanity evolved to a level that would be, you know, according to what we perceive as high culture, and then been nearly wiped out by some sort of event? Now, if we also take a look at some of the other interesting facts that talk about the level of advancement that Egypt has, you know, one thing I've heard asked before, sorry there, my microphone muted out on me for a second, but I've heard this question asked before, and where does all this knowledge come from? The knowledge that we see expressed in a lot of these ancient civilizations and even the megalithic structure, the knowledge that come from those is a good indication that this is the kind of knowledge that took years to develop, unless somebody taught them. Now, there's some very interesting theories about a high culture that was destroyed during the Younger Dryas event or the end of the Ice Age when the deluge, as they call it, also referred to as the flood of the Bible, Noah's flood. There are some people who think that some survivors from that event found the remnant of humanity and tried to keep the knowledge alive by teaching them new things, which could potentially explain why a lot of these ancient civilizations that are 5,000 years or, you know, between 5,000 years and now, just all of a sudden exploded. Of course, we've also heard the argument that's been made where roughly 10,000 years ago or so, there was something known as the brain event. And this is when the human brain grew 300%, if I'm not mistaken. That's a number I will have to check on. But yes, 300%. And from an evolutionary standpoint, that event happened so fast, it is literally overnight. This is not something that occurs naturally throughout history. This is also the time, again, where you start to see these things pop up, where you start to see abstract thought, you start to see cave art, you start to see, I shouldn't say cave art, I should say complex visual communication. This is where you start to see like the very early foundation for a written language. And you also start to see people coming together and forming societies and communities and building things. Göbekli Tepe, one of the mysteries around that is how once that was built, it was literally almost instantaneous that agriculture appeared out of nowhere. And Egypt is no different. Egypt has some mysteries of its own that show knowledge that they've had that they probably shouldn't have had. So again, how old is civilization around the world? There's really no telling. Now, just to kind of give you an idea as to some of the anomalies that have been spotted throughout the investigation of everything. So here's the Sphinx. And as I mentioned before, you can see how the wind erosion versus the water erosion on the body are completely different. And if any of you have ever lived along the river, any river, you know what it looks like when water starts to run down the embankment. It carves out the landscape vertically, not horizontally. The only time it carved out the land horizontally is if it's running as a river. But when it starts to run down vertically, it carved out the ground vertically. And that's where you start to see erosion like that. This erosion here, this is all water erosion. This is the kind of stuff that you see taking thousands of years of repeated rain seasons to carve this out. This is not wind erosion. This is not something that you would see typically in an area that is driven by wind and sand. And as I mentioned before, the only time that there was any substantial rain or any substantial amount of water was about 8,000 years ago at the longest. Now, there has been some argument that it could be as recent as 3,000 to 5,000 years, but we'll just kind of stick with the 8,000 years just for the sake of the argument. So, water erosion, wind erosion, big difference. And yet this is something that Egyptologists and mainstream academics have always tried to tell us that just it's not what we think it is. The pyramid, the Sphinx, it's all only 4,500 years old. That's it. Well, when you have people like Graham Hancock, also people such as Randall Carlson, who is a very well-noted and well-respected geologist, and Robert Schock, all of who have been on the Joe Rogan Experience, talking about this very thing, about the evidence in geology that paints a very different picture as far as how old Egypt really is. And if you really want to take another look at some of the hieroglyphs and some of the artwork, you'll also see that even in their artwork, they show more vegetation than what you see now. So they were around before the Sahara had completely consumed northern Africa. So let's talk about some of the artifacts that they've found that just does not make sense, that also point to the likelihood of an ancient civilization. So I'm sure if you've ever watched Ancient Alien, you've heard them mention the Saqqara bird. This is an amazing piece of artifact. Because when you look at this carving, it has the earmark for modern aerodynamic. Even though the face or the front end is shaped like a bird, the rest of the craft is shaped like a plane. No bird has a vertical stabilizer. Every bird throughout creation, throughout the evolutionary chain, every bird has always had a horizontal stabilizer, not a vertical one. And not to mention the placement of the wing. If you look at every other sculpture or piece of artwork involving the bird, its placement is different, and then also the wing shape. Now, they built a model of this and ran it through a wind tunnel and found that as it is right now, this design can sustain actual lift. The only thing that makes it, that keeps it from being completely flight-worthy is the absence of a horizontal stabilizer connected to the vertical stabilizer. The only thing. And there is also some evidence on the sculpture itself that showed that it may have had a horizontal stabilizer on the top, on the back at one point, just like an airplane. And of course, it's also left by an inscription that says, I want to fly. So that's one great piece of evidence that shows the level of understanding, even that far back. But again, where did this knowledge come from? They had to have gotten it from somewhere. Somebody had to have put in that spark that would lead them down a path of creativity, discovery, innovation, all of that. Where did it come from? Another great example, and this is probably one of the first pieces of evidence that I remember as a kid that really got me curious about the age of civilization, and that is the Baghdad Battery. This was something that was discovered decades ago, and I've completely forgot. Forgive me, I'm spacing this out. I had this all figured out. But this was discovered in the past, and when they built the replica and held it up to a voltmeter, they found that it actually did produce real electrical charging. And of course, as you can see in this picture, there are elements that go inside the jar, and they believe that it was filled with some sort of alkaline liquid like a vinegar, which would then react with the copper tube and the core, creating an electrical energy, an electrical pole. And it's measurable. They've proven that this thing can and does produce electricity. Of course, we also have ideas about, why did it make it? The conventional theory is that this was made to aid in electroplating. Electroplating is the ability to take an object, whether of any kind of metal, you put it in a solution, and you're able to put a thin layer of a different metal on there. So this would be an ideally used for electroplating gold onto certain objects. But then there's also another theory. And this is the one that I kind of always thought was a very interesting possibility. And I hope it's true, only because this, would totally change our understanding of the path. And that is the Dendera light bulb. The Dendera light bulb is probably another great example of human ingenuity. A lot of people think that this is just a spiritual symbology, but there are some things about it that just doesn't quite line up with that. Number one, why would you have a snake encased inside of an object? This does not signify anything really. It doesn't really correlate with any other type of ancient Egyptian symbology. The other issue is, if you look at the base of what looks like the bulb, they call it the lotus flower. Well, the lotus flower has a very long stem that goes to what looked like some sort of mechanical object. The issue is this. There is no species of lotus flower that I know of, especially in Egypt, where you would have a stem that long. And not to mention, be that flexible. Because when you look at the image and you look at how that stem runs up, it literally had the look of an electrical cable. Now, again, this is all a controversial theory. This is not a guaranteed proof that this is what it is. But it's just one of those examples that makes you scratch your head, makes you wonder. And if you look at there's so many things about ancient Egypt that really challenges what we think as far as human history. And probably one of my favorite ones, and this is one that just kind of come to my attention in recent years, is the astronomical connection, as well as the understanding of alignment and cardinal direction, and then to be this precise in the architectural in the construction of the Great Pyramid. And I'm sure if you are any enthusiast of strange history, you've already heard about this. But for those of you who haven't, when flight became available and they begin to start going over these places, they noticed the way the pyramids were constructed. Now, I'm not exactly sure when this was taken. I believe this is a satellite image, but it happened to take this image at just the right time. And if you look closely, you can see that the pyramid isn't just four sides. And I remember every time we talk, you know, in school, we talk about the pyramid. You know, we talk about this in math. We talk about this in geometry. It's always been four sides or three sides, you know, kind of like a three-sided pyramid. But it's always been four sides. But in this image, if you look close enough, you can see that it's actually eight sides. And it's only visible at a certain time of year when the sunlight hits it just right to be able to reveal all eight sides. And it's really cool. But how did they figure this out? They didn't have satellite technology back then. They didn't have, at least as far as we understand, they didn't have the kind of flight technology that like we have. Even if they had a basic hang glider, do you know how many times they would have to launch somebody on a glider over the site to be able to get this kind of, you know, view to be able to direct them and tell them, hey, you need to build this. You need to, it's got to line up this way. That it's amazing. They didn't have the heavy earth moving technology that we have. So the sheer scale of this thing is a testament to the builder. The intricate design that they put into the, to have eight sides, that's amazing. The fact that it lines up to the cardinal north is amazing. The fact that the three pyramids line up with Orion's belt, that's amazing. All these things we learn from someone somewhere. And there's so much more that I could go into, but I'm going to kind of keep this short because people like shorter content. But this is just one of those stories, one of those mysteries that we overlook time and time again. Too often we take mainstream academic word at face value without question. But we need to ask questions. Why is it that mainstream academic doesn't want people digging deeper? Why is it that certain governments around the world will stop this kind of research? And of course, you know, they always say the same thing. You know, they just want to shut it down to preserve the site. Well, you can't tell people to look for answers without letting them look for answers. And you can't tell people to just accept things at face value. We've seen how much the world changed in just our lifetime. We've seen how technology changes. We've seen things come and go. And yet the only thing that seemed to remain, the only thing that seemed to withstand the test of time, are these ancient monolithic sites that challenge our understanding of how far back civilization really goes. Well, again, that's going to be it. I really appreciate everybody stopping by. This has been a fun show, and I'm going to try to do more like this. If you haven't already, hit that like, share, subscribe, follow, and yeah, all that good stuff. And again, I will put the YouTube link for Joe Rogan's show where he's had Graham Hancock, Randall Carlson, and Robert Schock on, just so you can get a more in-depth look at the science behind their theory and why this is a science that is worth looking into. Also, I am going to be doing another episode for my other podcast, From the Wild. I'm still not exactly sure when that date will be. So, you know, follow my other page, From the Wild, on Facebook, and I will post more update there as far as dates and times. And that, if you're into, you know, the spiritual walk, just like I am. I mean, I am learning more as I go through my life, and I have questions just like anybody else. So let's find those answers together, and let's see where it takes us. And yeah, that is it. Again, like I said, I really had fun with this one. So be smart, be safe, be kind to one another, because you never know, your one act of kindness might change somebody's life. And never be afraid to ask questions. And most importantly, always stay weird.